Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. It's just me, a big, empty, echoey building with my dog in it, but also returning to the show, albeit not in this creepy warehouse, Adrian Lawrence, attorney and author of Staying in the Game, back on the show. Glad to have you here.
Ah, thank you for having me. And I am in a big, echoey apartment, but hey, it's all good. I like it.
But if it's haunted by anything, apparently it's just an adorable cat, from what I've heard.
Very true, very true. He's quite adorable, but he does haunt my dreams.
That's awesome. Okay, yeah. Well, if you're gonna have to have something do that, a cat's a good thing to have it be. Everybody who's already here, whether you're watching on YouTube or Twitch or God only knows some sort of platform that millennials don't know about and only the cooler younger generations do, I don't know, but whatever it is, whatever the acronym is, welcome. Glad to have you here. Hopefully going to expose you to some little information you might not have had before while entertaining you as well. That's the goal. We've got a lot that we're gonna be talking about today, including Bill Barr, a man who doesn't often sit for extensive interviews. We've got him opining on a number of different topics, including voter fraud, as well as police brutality and systemic racism. So that's gonna be awesome. Can't wait for that. Trump encourages his base to be criminals just like him. It's almost heartwarming. As well as we get a little bit more information about what's probably gonna end up being the October surprise that might turn the election, as well as Facebook and QAnon. We've got pretty much everything, Adrian. I'm excited. Are you excited?
I'm pretty jazzed. I can dig it.
I hope so. Everybody who is here, please hit the like button. Also, if you want to send in comments, super chats, tweets, anything like that, we'll be responding to that. I also did want to let you know, it's not like a formal partnership or anything, but the microphone manufacturer Blue, who makes microphones that I have in my personal life been using for a long time, including on the show, they recently sent both myself and Brett Ehrlich microphones. So as of today, I am using this really cool Blue Yeti X. Very excited to use this. Hopefully the audio is coming through well. Although if it's not, it's probably more on me than on the actual hardware. But anyway, hopefully that'll make the show a little bit smoother for you at home. And with all of that, why don't we jump into our first topic? Donald Trump has been talking a lot about voter fraud, generally trying to imply that it's a massive problem that he has a problem with. But he decided to mix it up a little bit yesterday, encouraging his fans to break the law and commit voter fraud.
They'll vote and they're gonna have to go and check their vote by going to the poll and voting that way, because if it tabulates, then they won't be able to do that. So let them send it in and let them go vote. And if their system's as good as they say it is, then obviously they won't be able to vote. If it isn't tabulated, they'll be able to vote. So that's the way it is. And that's what they should do.
Okay, so that was a relatively short clip, especially for Donald Trump. So let's be very clear about what he said there. Send in your mail-in vote, then go and try to vote. And if their system's as good as they imply it is, then you won't be able to. If it's not, then you will be able to vote a second time. I want to be very clear about that, because some of his representatives in the near future are going to be saying that that's not what he said. But anyway, we're going to have Bill Barr's opinion on whether this constitutes a crime. Adrian, though, I wanted you to step in. What do you think about this? Is it responsible for the president of a democracy to be encouraging his fans to try to vote illegally?
Well, you know, I'm not Bill Barr. I am not Attorney General. I am an attorney, however, and so I'd hate to, you know, maybe say anything that was against the Attorney General and whatever his conclusion will be. But this is a felony under North Carolina law. The fact is, you cannot vote more than once. It is very problematic, and it really blows me away how much Trump tries to undermine mail-in voting. And then now trying to get people to vote more than once, when there's no clear evidence out there that suggests that either party gains any kind of advantage by mail-in voting. Of course, that is if you're not shutting down the postal service. But for the most part, it's crazy, because he's out here really unleashing people to commit felonies and just shoulder shrugging it off in hopes that it will give him an advantage.
Exactly. And look, like you say, it's very responsible of you to note there is no clear evidence one way or the other who tends to benefit in any particular state, let alone nationally, with greater mail-in voting. Although Like, it's not impossible to imagine that it could be the Republicans. I mean, it certainly seems like it would benefit older voters potentially more than younger voters. Older voters tend to be more conservative. Again, that is not clear from the evidence. It's just speculation, but yeah. His campaign to get people to question whether mail-in voting is legit or not seems less focused on a short-term concern that mail-in voting will actually lean against him, and more on just providing sort of a foundation for him to claim that if he loses, it was fraudulent. That would be my assumption. But you're right, it is a crime. And let's be very clear, it is not just a crime to vote twice in North Carolina. Turns out doing what Donald Trump did right there, that itself is a crime too. And so I will refer you, although I know I don't need to because everyone has it memorized, to North Carolina election law section 163-175 subsection 7. For any person with intent to commit a fraud to register or vote at more than one precinct or more than one time, or to induce another to do so in the same primary election, or to vote illegally at any primary or election, is a crime. He is doing that inducing. Yep. Will he face any consequences? Obviously not, because he just gets as many free crimes as he wants. But it is clearly a crime to induce someone to break North Carolina election law. Let's just be clear about that.
Absolutely. Yep. And I love it because he can just do all the criming that he wants. That's something that's clearly shown us, that he can do crime. Hey, all it is signaling to people that they can get away with whatever they want to get away with too, and they have no respect for our justice system or department. So that's awesome.
Exactly. And let's be clear about more things. So one, how long does it take if you hear what Donald Trump said to figure out that it's crime? Well, it took me like 8 seconds on Google. So it's pretty simple. But I understand some members of our government have very packed schedules. So we're gonna turn now to Bill Barr, who seems to not be sure whether crimes are in fact illegal.
So let them send it in and let them go vote. And if the system is as good as they say it is, then obviously they won't be able to vote. That sounds like he's actually encouraging people to commit a crime, to vote twice.
I'm sorry, you'll have to read that again.
All right, vote. It sounds like he's encouraging people to break the law and try to vote twice.
Well, I don't know exactly what he was saying, but it seems to me what he's saying is he's trying to make the point that the ability to monitor this system is not good. And if it was so good, if you tried to vote a second time, you would be caught if you voted in person.
That would be illegal if they did that. If somebody mailed in a ballot and then actually showed up to vote in person, that would be illegal.
I don't know what the law in the particular state says.
You can't vote twice.
Well, I don't know what the law in the particular state says and when that vote becomes final.
Is there any state that says you can vote twice?
Well, there's some, you know, maybe that you can change your vote up to a particular term. I don't know what the law is, so I'm not going to offer.
He was saying test the system.
Well, if you know what he's saying, why are you asking me what he's saying?
He doesn't believe in the mail-in voting. You're the Attorney General of the United States.
Why don't you? Yeah.
Yeah, well, if you know that he's telling people to break the law, why are you asking me whether he breaks the law? What am I going to know about the law? I'm only the AG after all. Yeah, and I kept in that reset at the beginning with him like, you're going to have to read that again. Because this is a tactic that he's using. Throughout the interview, when he's just so bored, it's to imply that these aren't serious concerns. That the president actively encouraging his supporters to break the law isn't something serious. It's not actually a concern. Like, I don't, could you read it again? And that's going to pop up again when we talk about police brutality. But with that said, Adrian, what did you think about his lack of interest or knowledge in the law?
See, you were absolutely spot on in terms of his body language and how Barr responded. And hey, you're gonna have to read that back for me, as though it wasn't worth paying attention the first time. So I'm really gonna need you to kind of make this make sense to me. And it's wild, the gaslighting that we see coming from this administration, just so that they can essentially not admit to committing something that is blatantly a crime. And also, you know, we see these people saying, oh, that's not what he said, as though our ears aren't good enough. And wild, and it's unapologetic. And the worst part is there will be no consequences.
Yeah, Well, I mean, we're assured of that even more so than I generally am, because that is the AG who hypothetically in some alternative US government that was actually a functional democracy would be providing a check on the president when necessary, instead of being chosen specifically for, and because he made clear he would in a letter defend the president from any legitimate investigation into his many and continuing crimes. So here's the thing, and on that body language note, like, oh, is he telling, I don't know the law, how would I ever Google it? I mean, it's only every single article already made clear that it was against the law. I can't care about it. He can get fired up though. He's bored about that sort of thing, can get fired up, for instance, when he's fear mongering against mail-in voting.
Since that time, there have been in the newspapers, in networks, academic studies saying it is open to fraud and coercion. The only time the narrative changed is after this administration came in.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So he's got the statistics that he can cite, and it's a big issue. Even the Brennan Center and every other analyst says that there is sporadic voter fraud occasionally. It's like 1 in 300 million. And generally, I mean, look, if we were going to focus our attention on them, very frequently it's Republicans that are doing it. Not to say that that's not voter fraud, but seems like maybe it being some sort of plot by the left. There's not quite the evidence that he's implying that there is there.
Exactly, and I really, it's really, really disappointing, just because I don't know necessarily that the vast majority of the American people has the wherewithal to decipher what's going on. You know, because everybody's dealing with a lot of things in their own personal lives, trying to stay healthy from COVID, trying to keep a roof over their heads. So having, even inviting people like Bill Barr onto CNN to have the opportunity to gaslight the American people is problematic. And I wish these outlets would stop doing this, because as great as it is to have that gotcha moment on television, the fact is that not everybody can decipher that it's a gotcha moment, and all they hear is essentially what Bill Barr is saying and what he's communicating with his body language.
Yeah, and look, I'm not gonna go on too long about this, but I don't generally have a lot of hardcore conservatives on the show. And I know that some people who do jobs ostensibly like my own do that, specifically to ask them tough questions, to fact check them live and that sort of thing. And I get the intent behind that. But there reaches a point of willful dishonesty where I just don't think that any light, there's no truth to be revealed in this. Like, best case scenario, if you are supernaturally on your game, you can catch all the lies. And then generally, if you stop to correct every lie, the interview is gonna be nonsensical. It's not gonna be an actual conversation. But then what is the point of doing that? Bringing someone on who's gonna actively lie to you to advance horrific fascist policies, and then maybe you can defend against it? I don't know, I don't necessarily see the point. I know some people do a great job of it, Mehdi Hasan and others. I don't generally see the point of that. Now that said, let's turn now to the cleanup after this. So as soon as Donald Trump started talking about how he wants his followers to try to vote twice, and he said it now multiple times in a one day period, that would seem to undercut his argument of being against voter fraud as a general stance. But some people are paid to try to make sense of all of this. One such is Kayleigh McEnany. Let's listen.
Obviously, if that's the suggestion, be against the law, Kayleigh. Why did the president say that?
The president is not suggesting anyone do anything unlawful. What he said very clearly there is make sure your vote is tabulated, and if it is not, then vote. Basically, when you get a absentee ballot and you send it in, there are poll books and it is recorded that you have tried to vote, that you have in fact voted. And if you show up at a polling site, they look at the poll book and say your vote's been counted. He wants verification. What Democrats are saying is we want a system full of fraud and we want zero accountability and zero verification that you.
Okay, so Kayleigh McEnany started her job as press secretary telling the press, I will never lie, ever. You can trust me. And so she turns from Donald Trump literally committing a crime, telling his followers to commit a crime. That is proof that the Democrats want voter fraud and no accountability. That's her job. And look, to the extent that she did a good job there, I guess maybe it was a good choice of Trump to hire her, but she is 100% lying there, 100% about what actually happened.
Absolutely. She's like Kellyanne Conway with just better highlights. Like, just the amount of lies and gaslighting is wild. And even the fact that he said these things in North Carolina, you know, it's North Carolina is not proactively sending out ballots to all registered voters. You know, that's, there are 9 states in the District of Columbia that are doing things like that, but North Carolina isn't. So it's like, why even raise this? But then also North Carolina is not sending out absentee ballot applications to voters either. So the fact that you're almost trying to get people to vote twice in a place where they really even don't have that many options and opportunities, it just speaks to the fact that he can't even do crime right. You know, but now this is on the North Carolina Voting Commission and everyone to step forward and say, okay, guys, this is how it works. This is how you check to make sure that your vote counted. And it just, he's always creating more problems for everyone. And then having his little spokespeople come up behind him and say things like this. It just, it's the new world we live in. And it's absolutely wild. Yeah.
And I want people to be well armed for the continuing spin of this. So what she just said right there was, no, Trump was saying vote by mail and then go and check to see if it counted. And if it didn't, then you vote. Which in another video we didn't show you, he did say something like that. But you already saw the actual video. He said go and try to vote. And if the system works, they'll stop you because they've already registered your vote. That is not what Kayleigh McEnany tried to spin it into. He encouraged you to attempt to violate the law and hopefully the system will catch it before it happens. She pretended it was just about checking to see if your vote has already been logged. You can do that online if you want to. There's no reason to actually go on election day if that's what you're trying to do, because there's really no point in trying to break it down, but understand that that's what's actually going on. And by the way, if the larger point that Donald Trump theoretically was trying to make, which he wasn't and failing, is that you need to go make sure that your vote was counted because we can't be sure, you know, maybe it won't get there in time. Maybe they won't read it in time, all of that. That would be consistent with funding the post office, not trying to grind its operations to a halt and make sure that it doesn't have the resources to do its job. I would say that you get to do one of those two things. You get to burn the post office down, or you get to complain that mail-in ballots might not make it on time. If you're doing both of those things, there's an issue there. And I think the issue is the state of our democracy.
Sounds right.
I did want to add one other thing though. And so let's just log this in the projection file. So Donald Trump, who you just saw tell people to vote twice, I want you to take a look at a short video from back in May that a friend of the show, Parker Malloy, found. Take a look at Trump here.
The level of dishonesty with Democrat voting is unbelievable. If you told a Republican to vote twice, they'd get sick at even the thought of it.
I don't, are any Republicans watching this? Do you feel sick because he just told you to do that? See, it's all projection. It's all projection. They just say the thing that they want to do. Like Kayleigh McEnany, they don't want any accountability. They just want the voter fraud. Well, she's defending a guy that is encouraging violations of voter law. And again, how pathetic a position to be in, that the only thing I can think of to do to fight back against this is to point out the lies and the hypocrisy. But that doesn't stop it. That doesn't make our election any more secure. It doesn't make us any more confident that our votes will be counted well, that Trump supporters won't vote multiple times now because that's what they're being told to do. It's like keeping a diary of the end of the country. And it's just so sad at this point. It's so sad that that's what we have.
Absolutely. And something that I really feel like he's definitely setting up kind of this whole base for in challenging the voting system is because if he loses, then he's going to have this army of militant people out here who are using these guns and weaponizing and thinking that the system is unfair and it's rigged. And they're going to essentially end up being a militia in some form or fashion, maybe even challenging the actual vote and the government. And this is really scary, especially when we see what his people tend to do, particularly when they're armed.
Yeah, I mean, if they'll murder multiple people to protect someone else's drugstore in a different state, God only knows what they'll do if they think falsely that the election was stolen. And that is why, man, you're gonna have to brace for impact on election day and potentially in the days after, because there's a lot of different ways it could go. And it needs to be super clear immediately on election day that Trump has lost for us to really have a chance of getting through this without major issues, going to the Trump Supreme Court, to people being injured or killed in the streets. Like, if Florida goes for Biden, then we're probably okay, because effectively there's no path for Trump if that happens. If it doesn't, and it really comes down to differences in the percentage of the vote on election day versus the mail-in ballots that might need to be counted afterward, that is not a game that I'm interested in playing. It needs to be done on election day with the lead only growing from the mail-in ballots for me to feel comfortable at least.
Absolutely.
It's been more than a week now at this point since a right-wing domestic terrorist shot multiple people in Kenosha following days of protest over the attempted murder of Jacob Blake by a number of cops. And despite all of this time and all of these developments, Donald Trump and his representatives have not spoken to the Blake family or their representatives. They've spun any number of different lies that had to be debunked about their efforts to do so. But Bill Barr was being interviewed and he was asked, what if you had an opportunity? What message would you have for the Blake family? And here's what he said.
You nor the president had a chance to meet with him or his family for that matter. What would be your message to them?
To who?
To the Blake family.
I guess my message to them would be what it would be to all Americans, which is in cases where it's possible or there's concern over excessive force, we have a process in this country to make that determination. And it involves initially the state looking at it and also the federal government. And we are investigating it. And that should follow due process and be fair to everybody, including the police officer. And violence is not appropriate. Our justice system has to respond to analysis, reasoned analysis, not mob violence.
So
that's his message, Adrian. First of all, I left in the who to who, because again, the body language, he knows. What do you think? What was Wolf Blitzer talking about? He's talking about the Blake family. What's your message to who? Because I don't care. I'm barely even paying attention to you. This isn't a topic that actually matters to me. That's what I got from it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not. And that's the thing, that you have these representatives in place who only care about a certain subset, which is white and wealthy. And they're gaslighting the rest of us and creating this narrative that injustice is a fiction of our own minds, and that we are criminals, and that we are just looking to tear apart the democracy. Would invent anything, we are reinforcing the fact that this needs to be an operable democracy and that the people need to be taken care of. And yet he can't even muster some sense of decency to acknowledge Blitzer's question and to actually address the Blake family, which would essentially be addressing black people. He is beneath.
There was no, my heart goes out to them, absolute tragedy. The idea that they would have to go through this experience, that he's gonna be injured, potentially paralyzed for the rest of his life. That's just devastating, that would be a result of an interaction with law enforcement. And we should aim for an America where no individual, black, white, or whatever, should ever have to go through any, no, none of that.
Nope.
It was just a basic
PR response. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you have done it justice, but instead you act like you couldn't even hear the question. You know, and the reality is that black people are shot and killed by police at twice the rate, if not more, than white people. And the fact that we have studies showing that, a 2020 Northeastern Harvard data-driven study of 27 states just came out earlier this year. So for people to continue to act like this is a non-issue, it really shows how much they are into maintaining the system of institutionalized racism. And the fact that police brutality is only a problem for a small segment of the community, which is us and people who look like us.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're a regular person watching all of this and thinking, does the Trump administration think that they have to project any empathy at all after the last few months? Bill Barr's message to the family was, it's gonna be due process. Just let the system continue. God, why are you getting on about me? And then the violence and the looting and all of that. Is the Blake family doing that? Because remember, this is a message to the Blake family. Are they killing people? No, that's their message. He doesn't care. He went on, by the way, to say when Wolflitzer asked him about Blake as well as George Floyd. He said, well, hold on, let's not lump these together, okay? And Wolf Blitzer's like, well, why aren't we talking about both of these as an instance of police brutality? And he said, well, in the case of George Floyd, he was unarmed and he was already restrained, whereas Floyd was committing a felony and he was armed. And Wolf Blitzer said, well, no, he wasn't armed. There might have been a knife in the car, but he wasn't armed at all. And Barr said, I made my position clear. He doesn't care. And that's honest. They don't actually care whether he was armed. And if he had a knife, that's justification to unload every bullet you have in his back. The idea is that what Jacob Blake was about to do was he was going to turn around with a knife, feet away from his kids, and begin murdering cops left and right in front of them. That's the future that they're saying was so guaranteed that the cops were justified in unloading their pistols into his back. But again, that's what they believe. They always believe that if it's a black individual, they're going to lose it like a villain in a comic book and begin killing people randomly. There was only one person there that was exhibiting that sort of callous disregard for human life. And it was the cop, the one that Bill Barr is actually defending.
Yes, and something that really seems to resonate with me is that it's the cop's narrative that there was a knife in his car. You know what, that knife could have been a knife from Popeyes. It could have been a spork. The way these law enforcement lie. So to run with that narrative that was fed out into the media, it's nonsensical. The cops have lost any kind of credibility in my eyes. So when they come forward and say, oh, so-and-so, we thought they had a gun, or oh, we thought they were armed. Yeah, right. It reminds me of the Dave Chappelle skits of sprinkle a little crack on it. Mm-hmm. And how these officers do what they need to do to justify the criminality that they engage in.
Yeah. And if you are a conservative watching this, I would like to ask you a question. If you have a knife in your car or truck, are cops allowed to murder you if you go near your car? Because I know a lot of you got knives in your trucks. You certainly have guns in some of them. If you got a gun in your truck, do they get to murder you? And then if they find something later, say that was the justification. You don't actually believe that. You definitely don't believe that. And you've certainly seen the videos recently of white individuals literally pointing guns at protesters, at cops, and the cops don't shoot them. Even though it's not some sort of like speculation about whether they might have a spork, they're pointing a deadly weapon at people, but they can be managed. Okay, we can take that from them without any bloodshed necessarily. But if Jacob Blake is within 10 feet of a spork, He's gotta die. And again, that's what Bill Barr, the lead law enforcement official in America, is saying. Now, he does go broader as well. Bill Barr was asked about systemic racism, and you'll be shocked what his stance on it is.
I did say that I do think that there appears to be a phenomenon in the country where African Americans feel that they're treated when they're stopped by police frequently as suspects before they're treated as citizens. I don't think that necessarily reflects some deep-seated racism in police departments or in most police officers. I think The same kind of behavior is done by African-American police officers. I think there are stereotypes. I think people operate very frequently according to stereotypes. And I think it takes extra precaution in the, on the part of law enforcement to make sure we don't reduce people to stereotypes. We treat them as individuals. So, you know, I think the narrative that there's a, that the police are on some epidemic of shooting unarmed black men is simply a false narrative. And also the narrative that that's based on race. No, to me, the word systemic means that it's built into the institution. And I don't think that's true. I think our institutions have been reformed in the past 60 years. And if anything has been built in, it's a bias to non-discrimination and safeguards against that.
I mean, Adrian, what do you think?
You know, the first rule of white supremacy is to deny there's any sort of white supremacy or racism. And Bill Barr is holding steadfast to that rule. You know, again, as I quoted the study earlier from 2020, Harvard, Northeastern, there have been so many studies out there, the data, the numbers, they don't lie. Get out of here. You know, the fact that you don't want to believe that racism exists, the fact that you don't want to think that narrative is, you know, just more nonsense from the Trump administration and his little hooligans denying facts, science, research, only to fit the narrative that keeps them in power. And it's absolutely incredibly problematic, but I'm not gonna let it ruin my day. Not today, Satan. You can sit in the corner, Bill Barr, I'm done.
To your knowledge, is there a level of the criminal justice system from distribution of policing to, you know, stops, arrests, charges, sentences, appeals, trying to get out of prison, anything? Is there a level where there is not a bias based on race? Do we know of one?
No. You know, as someone who has a bachelor's and master's in criminal justice and a law degree and studied to be in law enforcement and also taught criminal law and has worked in various aspects of the law enforcement community and the legal community, I can tell you no. You know, it wasn't our justice system, as much as we love that little statue of her covering her eyes and being blind. Nah, the woman can see and she sees in color. Mm-hmm. Like, no, no one is able to avoid bias and no one's able to escape it. And the thing is, if you don't confront it, it's gonna continue to be a problem. And our law enforcement communities, not only are they not confronting it, they're denying it, and it's a big problem.
Yeah, and it's just, it just makes me sick to watch him there in a position of so much power, knowing that he can and has gotten away with breaking the law, knowing exactly how biased the system is from top to bottom, but knowing that he has the power. And so he doesn't have to care. He'll do an occasional interview, but it doesn't matter. Nothing's gonna come of it. Like, it reminds me of, this is the stupidest comparison ever. Are you watching Lovecraft Country by any chance?
Oh, I haven't started it yet.
Okay, then I'm not gonna spoil anything because it's very good. But there are racist cops, I'll say that. That's not gonna be a shock to anyone. And they're just so self-satisfied with the fact that they can do whatever they want. And that's supposed to be set decades and decades and decades ago. And there's Bill Barr. And it's fundamentally the same approach. It's, we can do whatever we want. And the worst that'll ever happen to us is that we have to go on cable news and deny that we're doing it. And that's it. Here he is. I'm gonna play one more video of Bill Barr. This is Bill Barr defining what racism is and then insisting that it doesn't actually matter.
Racism usually means, you know, that I believe that because of your race, you're a lesser human being than me. And I think there are people in the United States that feel that way, but I don't think it is as common as people suggest. And I think we have safeguards to ensure that it doesn't really have an effect to someone's future. I think we've made a lot of progress in the past 60 years. To listen to the American left nowadays, you'd think we've gotten nowhere after all.
There's no doubt there's been a lot of progress, but do you think black people are treated differently by law enforcement than white people?
I think there are some situations where statistics which suggest that they are treated differently, but I don't think that that's necessarily racism. Didn't Jesse Jackson say that when he looks behind him and he sees a group of young black males walking behind him, he's more scared than when he sees a group of white youths walking behind him? Does that make him a racist? Did that make him a racist?
But
I mean, he's one of the most powerful individuals in the country. And he repeatedly during that interview would say, oh yeah, no, police are definitely biased against black individuals. There's extra suspicion, all of that. And every single time immediately, but it's not systemic and it doesn't matter and it doesn't lead to anything and who cares? Like, oh no, totally, they're biased. There's tons of stereotypes, totally. And the idea that if our fundamentally racist society ever leads to a non-white individual buying into any level of that racism, then you can be a literal member of the KKK and it's all the same. It doesn't matter. If you accept any of it as a non-white individual, you're as bad as the grand wizard.
It's I just see these tropes and these lies continue to play out of this thought that racism doesn't exist unless it's in a white hood, that there's not subtle forms of racism that ruin lives every day. And I think that this George Floyd movement, a lot of that is about these more subtle forms of racism that permeate our everyday lives and that tear us apart in terms of workplaces and absence of our existence, being paid lower, being mistreated, that these are all symptoms of racism. And when people think that they are completely absolved of it, that it's not their problem, it has nothing to do with them, that's when we don't get anywhere. And unfortunately, we're not moving anywhere as a society because people won't confront the fact that racism exists. And people like Bill Barr are just, all they're doing is perpetuating those lies.
Yeah, they won't confront it, and they won't even acknowledge or talk to or even listen to the largest social movement of our life.
Yeah.
Like that is the obstacle to change, that you can organize something we haven't seen in more than a half a century and they can just ignore it 100% and imply that everyone in that is crazy. You got Bill Barr effectively saying that every single one of those people marching is fundamentally wrong. He doesn't know any of them. He doesn't know anything about their life experience, their perspective. He's not gonna listen to their concerns, but they're wrong. They are stupid and wrong. And it's not just him. The same in right-wing media. Tucker Carlson has literally never listened to one of the valid concerns of this movement. Just today, Ben Shapiro tweeted, what is the evidence that black Americans, all 42 million of them, wake up knowing that they could be murdered just for being black? What is the evidence to justify this proposition? He's asking a lot of questions there, but you can rest assured they're rhetorical because he definitely isn't gonna talk to any representatives of the movement about any of this. He's just spitting it out on Twitter, this intellectual gladiator of the right. He's not interested in actually understanding any of these concerns. He's not interested in wondering why 10 to 20 million Americans could be so fundamentally wrong for a century plus about their own lived experience. Why would all of this be wrong? I don't know. I'm curious enough to tweet it. I'm not curious enough to sit down with anyone though.
Yeah, but the thing is, I sincerely feel he knows the answer. This is all antics and playing into these tropes. We see what former super conservative racist Joe Walsh now come around to acknowledge Black Lives Matter, black people are being mistreated. Like they didn't know before. Everybody knew. It's just a matter of acknowledging it, because if you actually acknowledge someone's plight, you have to acknowledge your participation and your involvement in it. And so it's still one of these, oh, I'm not convinced and I'm a smart person kind of rhetoric. But the thing is, I will note, it's come a lot further, because remember, it's first, you don't understand the movement you're a part of. Also, stick to sports, just dribble. Paid hired actors, like all of these things to delegitimize. And now having Bill Barr just say, oh, you're wrong, that at least goes a little ways, you know? Hey, it gives me some credibility. It's nice.
Exactly. Hey. Oh, geez. We've been talking for a bit now about the likelihood, the fear that Donald Trump will approve a vaccine right before the election, regardless of whether it exists, can be purchased, has been tested, is safe, all of that. And we seem to be moving steadily towards that happening. In a letter to state governors and health departments obtained by The Hill, CDC Director Robert Redfield said the McKesson Corporation and its subsidiaries would soon be applying for permits to build distribution sites for a vaccine. He asked governors to consider waiving requirements that would delay construction or opening the sites. Now, let's say hypothetically that they are actually close to having a vaccine and it's close to being produced in the numbers that they would be able to have distribution sites. Wanting those to be available as soon as possible, all of that being accepted seems like a laudable goal. But wait until you find out about the timeline that they're working on. This is from CDC Director Robert Redfield, who said, CDC urgently requests your assistance in expediting applications for these distribution facilities and, if necessary, asks that you consider waiving requirements that would prevent these facilities from becoming fully operational by November 1st, 2020, which is another way of saying 2 days before the election. It might be, what, Adria, is it just like a miracle that the vaccine's gonna be ready to go the week of the election? Are we that lucky?
And it's sad because there are people out there who this will be what tips them over to vote for Trump. And the worst thing is, I don't know about you, but I'm not taking any vaccine that was rushed through any kind of trials. Yeah, right. So I can grow an arm out of the side of my face. Get out of here. And the worst part is, you know, they're going to try to get people who are brown and black to inject this stuff in them first. No, I'm good. I will wait. I want whatever Angela Merkel has to offer me. Like, that's what I want. I'm gonna fly to Germany and I'm gonna let them hit me up with stuff. I'm not doing that here. No.
I mean, the only problem with that plan is that if Germany is being responsible, they're not gonna allow an American off the plane.
I know, man, which is why I gotta get my spy game up. I'm gonna try. I will apply to the University of Germany. I don't know. I made that up, but I will apply. I'm getting over there. I'm not doing this here.
Yeah. Now, Redfield assured governors that the requirements that might need to be waived would not compromise the safety or integrity of the products being distributed. I don't understand how he can say that the requirements that the states would be waiving won't cause any concerns or any problems. That doesn't seem like that's up to him. It seems like it's up to the states or potentially the manufacturer of the vaccine rather than Redfield. I don't know. But anyway, for context, Anthony Fauci has been saying for a long time, since January, in fact, that a vaccine would be unlikely to be ready before the end of 2020, sometime between that and the first half of 2021. Now, recently he has said, I believe that by the time we get to the end of this calendar year, that we will feel comfortable that we do have a safe and effective vaccine. But by the end of the calendar year, being relatively confident that we have a safe vaccine is different than and have distribution centers operating and giving people the vaccine 2 days before the election. So again, like with so many other things, I don't know exactly what I'm supposed to say. I'm just hoping to put this out here so that more people will know what the plan clearly is, and ideally that the media will know, because they love drama in elections. So when Donald Trump inevitably approves a vaccine 5 days before the election, says in 2 days you'll be able to go and get it, are they going to exercise critical thought and judgment? Are they gonna talk to doctors? Are they gonna like look at the actual information about the tests that were done, if they were even done? And I worry that it's just gonna be, you know, vaccine authorization provides curveball in last days of election. It's just gonna be, hey, we don't have anything to do with this. We don't have any sort of journalistic job to accomplish, but man, isn't it exciting?
No, I completely and totally agree with you. And the thing that kind of really sits with me is the fact that the Tuskegee experiment just ended back in 1972. I've dated guys older than that. You know, it's the fact that we have a society that has exploited vaccines, and then they go whoops when things go bad. And they create these, you know, oh, we're gonna compensate you, but it's not much compensation. It also takes a lot of legal fight and a lot of gumption that a lot of people don't have. And yet then they're stuck with all sorts of deformities, issues. And the fact that we have a government willing to rush through this vaccine and the trial situation just so that he can continue, Trump can continue to stay in office is very problematic, because it's essentially just sacrificing people. And there will be people who will fall for it.
Yeah, potentially. Although in a recent poll, up to a third of Americans said that they're not going to be taking a vaccine once it becomes available. 20% are just opposed to vaccines in general. So a lot of that is just being against vaccines rather than being against this one. But that is still millions of Americans that hold that position. Here's a sick question for you. Is it progress that the American government used to care so little about the lives of Black and Brown Americans that they would rush through medication by testing on them? Is it progress that now they don't care about any of our lives, and so they will authorize a vaccine that might end up killing us?
Yeah, I would say, hey, that is some progress, because the thing is, they're not gonna give it to wealthy white people. They will use it on all sorts of Black and Brown people and poor white people. And so I really see this as, unfortunately, what capitalism is kind of nudging the race when it comes to racism. Like, I guess that's the only thing that we can say. Okay, you know, we've replaced another ill.
Yeah. And it's like, how many votes will need to be swayed? Like, would a vaccine coming out and the promise that everything's going back to normal, would that sway 1% of the vote? How could it not sway 1% of the vote? 2-3% of the vote, maybe?
I'm just, after that, what, hydroxychloroquine, whatever they had, I don't understand how anyone could just be willing to pump themselves with whatever the president says is acceptable. And and the worst part, and I don't mean to be horrible, but if he gets reelected into office and a bunch of these people who voted for him took these vaccines, they may not even be here with us to suffer while we suffer with him for another 4 years.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. And the sick thing that is that in terms of actual sort of social or political consequences of that, I worry that the takeaway wouldn't be that this was an incredibly cruel, cynical, inhumane exploitation of the American people. It would be vaccines kill you.
Yes, exactly. And then we're going to have people fighting just, you know, already credible vaccines. And it's going to become even more problematic just to get people to, you know, not have typhoid and typhus show up again. It's just, there's no hope here. And I don't understand why people continue to think there's hope in Trump.
I think that the only fair path is to, as a blanket rule, not just on COVID, test vaccines on Republican congressmen. That's the only fair way, because they assure us that they're so strong that they're not worried about disease. So their immune systems will lead the way.
Yes.
Anyway, okay, let's talk about one more topic that has to do with the run up to the election, and this involving social media. Okay, Facebook has been a great place for a long time to store some of your photos and be exposed to conspiracy theories that turn you into a political monster. It's still that, but it might be making a few changes that could potentially have an effect on the election. So here is what Facebook has announced recently. The social network said it planned to bar any new political ads on its site in the week before Election Day. It said it would also strengthen measures against posts that try to dissuade people from voting. Okay, so that sounds good. The idea that if you're posting to tell people not to vote, you should get rid of that. That I don't think should be a new policy. And I hate that we have a system where that's a common thing. But the barring, I don't know, barring like the new ads. What do you think about that, Adrian? Having a week long period with no new ad buys.
I think that is kind of somewhat counterintuitive to a certain extent, just because, you know, we have potential new ads doesn't necessarily mean that they are problematic. It's just wild to me that Facebook, with all the revenue that it generates and it's all of its worth, that it can't hire teams to sufficiently weed through. And I guess I shouldn't say can't as much as I should say won't. The fact is that they continue to fail us and take advantage and leverage individual ignorance to the point that we are stuck with what we've had 4 years of the Trump administration, and we could have 4 years more if it doesn't get its nonsense in order, because the American people, God bless them, but they cannot be trusted.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, like, there's a lot of ways that the American people are just the worst, but part of it is they trust the things that they see. And when the most powerful companies in the world have created systems that spread misinformation better than they've ever spread anything that's accurate. Like, yeah, it's on the individual people, but it's also on them. Like, Facebook has been actively allowing Donald Trump to lie in his ads throughout this year and saying that it's not their job to be the arbiters of truth. And the thing is, as you say, ads aren't the problem. Lies in ads are the problem. Provocations to violence are the problem. And neither of those things are difficult to weed out. Marginally more difficult than just not having any ads, I guess. But I feel like you could figure it out. If you figured out how to steal all of the developments from Snapchat and all these other companies and make them part of Facebook, you can figure this one out, I think. But they don't want to. And the thing is, let's say we have a period of no new ads, which, by the way, explicitly does not stop ads continuing into that period. So as long as you start it a week and a half before the election, you can continue your lies and ads throughout, just to be clear. So what will there be? There will be a vacuum, but that vacuum is going to be filled. We have a great quote from Tara McGowan, chief executive of liberal nonprofit group Acronym, who says, by banning new political ads in the final critical days of the 2020 election, Facebook has decided to tip the scales of the election to those with the greatest followings on Facebook. And that includes President Trump and the right-wing media that serves him. It's gonna be Breitbart and it's gonna be Ben Shapiro and all of that. I don't know exactly what it's gonna look like, but I do know that yesterday on Facebook, 12 of the top 15 most shared links were about Nancy Pelosi's salon visit. Now, that's not fake news. She actually did that. So I guess that's an improvement, but that does not give me a lot of confidence of Facebook allowing a hands-off approach to lead to people actually getting access to all of the critical information that they need.
And you would think that Facebook would have a sense of accountability, but the thing is that it does not. And we know that there are other countries out there that actually invest some time in making sure that they don't have these kind of problems and uprisings by regulating essentially what's said. And yet here we're so clinging steadfast to that thought of First Amendment regulation and not trying to keep voices out and condemned, where it's really taking down our democracy. And it's unfortunate that people don't realize that we need greater regulation of these entities that are essentially becoming propaganda mills, because it's taking down our democracy and all of the foundations and the underpinnings of our nation. And it's absolutely problematic, but no one's doing anything about it.
Yeah, and there was one other change. It's just like, Facebook is getting a lot of positive press today because of these changes they're making. They're taking things seriously for once. But so the other change is, post-election, Facebook said it would quash any candidate's attempts at claiming false victories by redirecting users to accurate information on the results. Okay, so if that's all you know, that sounds pretty good, because there's a not insignificant chance that Donald Trump is going to declare victory no matter what happens. But what do they mean by quash their attempts by redirecting to accurate information? Like, as an example, Donald Trump earlier today tweeted something about how mail-in voting is all fraudulent and you can't trust your vote. So Twitter and Facebook put additional information about voting as a sort of fact check. And on Facebook, it's a little additional thing at the bottom. It doesn't block his post, and it doesn't, like, in the actual notification, it doesn't say that he's wrong or he's lying. It just says click for additional information about voting. That doesn't quash anything. Now, maybe this will be different, but I haven't seen anything on Facebook that implies to me that they're really going to take this seriously. Like Mark Zuckerberg, he's really worried about Trump illegitimately maintaining his presidency. Why would we believe that at this point? Why would we offer any sort of goodwill towards Facebook? I don't know, and I doubt many people will.
No, and I don't think that they should. And unfortunately, there's a certain segment of our society who lives and breathes Facebook. And, you know, those are the ones who need access to the most accurate information. And Zuckerberg has no incentive, no incentive whatsoever. What I think they got the largest government regulatory fine that's ever been issued. I think it was maybe 1% of their net income that year. Like, there's no incentive to do right. And if anything, having Trump in power continues to help him out, because he doesn't get the taxes that he should be paying, you know, and he doesn't have the regulation that is needed for Facebook. But nothing's going to change.
I disagree with you there. Things always change, just generally for the worst.
Yeah, sorry. Oh God, I was the one thinking I was being negative. Come on, John.
Tell him. No, no. I mean, I used to like, remember when like Ann Coulter was the source of misinformation?
Yes.
I think that was easier to refute than what we've got these days.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And especially because at least with Ann Coulter, there's like a limited bandwidth for her lies, as odd as that is. There is kind of a bottom, but when it comes to this stuff that's circulating on Facebook, there's really no bottom. And people can go ahead and, you know, get their confirmation bias in by Googling things and finding, yes, that is supported.
We know that throughout this year, the QAnon theory that's been around for a few years, despite the fact that it's never gotten even a single one of its predictions right about Democrats being a satanic cult of pedophiles that are shipping people in Wayfair cabinets and drinking their blood hormones and ripping off their faces during sex acts. That's just part of the theory, by the way. It's become a lot more popular though. And how popular? Well, according to a recent poll, 1 in 3 Republicans believe that the QAnon theory is mostly true. Another 23% of Republicans say that some parts of the QAnon conspiracy are true. Put together, that is 56% of Republicans. Only 13% say that it's not true at all. In contrast, 72% of Democrats say the QAnon conspiracy theory is not true at all. Only 4% of Democrats say it's even partly true. Some don't know enough about it to say. That will probably change over time. Now, I have some concerns about this poll, but Adrian, as you've seen the QAnon thing become so normalized in the Republican Party and millions of Americans are adherents to it, what does that make you think about America?
It tells me that Americans who are, you know, subscribing to these theories, that they feel out of control and they're trying to make sense of things that are going on. And I did some research kind of just to figure out what is going on in these people's heads. And that was exactly it. The fact that when people feel that they're not in control of their lives, and also when there's a lot of tension between societal subgroups, people will latch on to these conspiracy theories. And they essentially think that this is the way to make sense of all of the things that they don't know, which tells you people don't feel like they're in any control. They don't feel they're getting the information they need, and it's dangerous. Yeah.
It is, and that sort of uncertainty is incredibly stressful, and it interacts poorly with situations that are themselves stressful, such as economic collapses, public health crises, all of that. And I get it, and people want to understand the world around them. The issue is that we have techniques for doing that. I mean, the scientific method broadly, speaking with people and learning about other experiences is one way to do that. But all of that is difficult and complicated and would really require an education system far better than the American one. So just lizards control everything, or, you know, there's demon semen or alien DNA is being used to develop vaccines. These are shortcuts to that. And they're also sort of a little bit exciting. You know, if you're not really into Marvel or Star Trek or anything, you can have Q and it's got all the same plot points. The entire thing is really scary, but for a lot of people, they haven't been armed with the cognitive tools to see through some of this. And so it's becoming more common. Now, that doesn't mean it's becoming as common as this poll implies. I think that a lot of Americans believe in the Q thing. I think it's much more common than it was a year ago. And I think it's just embarrassing and horrifying that so many Republicans have normalized it and now think it's totally cool. But there's an issue with the poll. And the issue is that when you actually dig into the methodology of the poll, the question that everyone was asked was, do you believe that the QAnon theory about a conspiracy among deep state elites is true? That is not necessarily a good way to poll people about QAnon. Is it inaccurate? No. The QAnon theory is about a conspiracy among deep state elites, but every conservative believes that there's a conspiracy among deep state elites. Not everyone believes that those deep state elites are drinking baby blood. Like, there are levels beyond just the deep state. That I think this is probably inflating the numbers artificially to a greater or lesser degree. I don't know how much, and I do think a lot of Americans believe in Q. I just don't think this is super accurate necessarily.
There almost should be like levels of Q, you know?
Like kind Scientology? Of like,
yeah. No, I totally agree, because like you said, there aren't people who think that, you know, celebrities are out here drinking baby blood. And it's really interesting though, because I had a girlfriend not too long ago who I hadn't seen in a few years, who I had met through church. And I ran into her and she was talking this QAnon stuff, and she truly believed in it. And she's like a nurse. And so she has like a real job and she is a person of significance. And so I didn't shame her in any way. I told her I'd like to hear more. So I could probably kind of assess like how deep is this person in, and she was very, very deep. And that kind of scares me because it makes me realize that so many people who are very much normalized and seem balanced, they have it, are really latching on to this. And these people are trying to make sense of these societal events that frighten them, because this thought that there could be chance out there, that scares them. And unfortunately, I feel like there's a whole reach of people out there who are looking for some kind of answer, and they're really looking to latch on, and it's scary.
Yeah, you're right. The world is a complex, scary place where things don't necessarily work out the way that you think they should or would like them to. Since we were roaming like the prairie in Africa, we've been coming up with ways to try to deal with that fundamental reality. And there are some things that, by comparison to QAnon, like organized religion is a way of understanding the complexity and chaos of the natural world. Those are seeming a little bit more reasonable now to me in comparison to, Hillary Clinton drinks adrenochrome or whatever it is. I honestly don't even know. But more people are believing that. And so, like, I used to make jokes at the end of 2019, like, people still believe this, but it's expanding. So everybody needs to get at least a baseline of information about this to figure out how to fight back against it, because the experience you talked about, more and more people are gonna have that. My wife, I'm not gonna be specific, she talked to someone and they believe it and they're seemingly a reasonable person. But the issue is that it's a very expertly crafted conspiracy theory. It allows for all other conspiracy theories. So if you're a flat earther, you might like Q. If you're a lizard people control government thing, you might like Q. They say, I'm not telling you to believe anything. Go and research on your own. But they do that knowing that 99% of the people they're telling that to don't have the tools to do that sort of research. And so it provides the veneer of sort of scientific analysis without any of the reality of it. It's insidious. And so people do need to learn more about it, I think.
Absolutely. And it's funny, because this is also why I don't do hard drugs, because I know I have an addictive personality. And so, if I hit that heroin, I probably ain't coming back, just some Chardonnay. And I feel like the same way goes with this QAnon and Scientology stuff. Because I want answers too, which is why I'm not gonna come to your doorstep, because I know once I hit that, I may not come back to just this normal way of living and this kind of just, it's okay if I don't have the answers. So I recommend to everybody out there, know who you are. And if you kind of got that addictive personality and you want those answers, don't go down that path. It's not, stay away.
It's funny, in the same way, I went to grad school at UT Austin, and people who go to UT Austin might know, maybe it's gone now, but on the main drag, basically, where the campus ends and then you cross the street and you're in stores, right across from the campus, there's a Scientology like recruiting center where you can go and get screened for your thetans or whatever. And so people sometimes would go as a lark, I'm gonna go just for fun. And I never did. Not because I don't think that I'm a critical thinker, but they've spent decades learning how to rope people in. I respect that. I respect the threat that it poses. I'm not gonna expose myself to that. And now we've got Q. Not to say it's exactly the same thing, but they both involve aliens, so.
Yeah, hey man, let's not, don't go down that path. Don't hit that stuff, nope.
Not today. Sit in the corner like Adrian said.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/tyt. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.